Welcome to Panelcast, Forbidden Panels podcast featuring comic books, video games, and movie news and reviews. And now, your host, AJ Herrera.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 159 of the Panelcast. This is Anthony, back again, with your host as always, AJ.
Hey everybody.
This time around, we've got our regular news segment for you, and we've got a few reviews this time. We're going to be talking about Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, and we're going to give you our take on Suicide Squad. All that and more after this break. All my friends are heathens, take it slow. Wait for them to ask you who you know. Please don't make any sudden moves. You don't know the half of the abuse.
Hi everyone, Robert here at QBC Toys and More, inviting you to visit our store in Victorville. We are the premier comic, toy, and collectible store in the high desert. Sign up for our comic pull list service and never miss an issue again. Like us on Facebook to stay up to date on sales, promotions, and events. Mention this podcast in the store to receive 10% off your total purchase. QBC Toys and More. Yes, we have candy too. Located on Hesperia Road, next to the Tri-City Car Wash. Please don't
forget. Welcome back, everybody. It's time again to go into our news segment. I will send it over to AJ to get things started. AJ?
Well, it's kind of hard to find any really relatable comic book news out there after Comic-Con. It seemed like everything exciting as far as comic books go died after Comic-Con, which is probably just as well because we all needed a break for a minute. But as far as comic book film goes, it looks like Hugh Jackman's third Wolverine film won't just be the end of the line for Jackman in his role, but also potentially his co-star, Sir Patrick Stewart. Speaking with ITV this week, the famed thespian says that his turn as Professor Charles Xavier in the James Mangold helmed film is quite possibly an end after 17 years in the role. Quote, I would imagine this is probably the end of this franchise for me, but the thing about science fiction and fantasy is that you can never ever say it's the end, it's over. It'll be a very different Charles Xavier, nothing like the Charles Xavier you've seen in the past. So, there you have it. Not only is Hugh Jackman stepping down, but Patrick Stewart as well. Maybe he'll go on and randomly show up in some of the new Star Trek films or the Star Trek Discovery TV show coming out.
I mean, Patrick Stewart is a fantastic actor, and he's done Professor X more than justice. He's done a really great job playing that character. It doesn't surprise me that after so many years he's ready to kind of step away from it and move on to other projects, but it does make me sad because there isn't anyone, I can't think of anyone who will fit that role as well as he has over the last few years.
However, you know, he's now moved on to this new series called Blunt Talk, where he actually gets to have a little fun as opposed to being, you know, restricted by portraying Marvel characters or portraying the Roddenberry universe. Having to be very tight and restrictive. Now he's getting to like curse and have a little fun and be an alcoholic. So maybe retiring means he's just tired of all of our bullshit and wants to have a little freedom before he goes.
Fair, fair.
What do you got for us, Anthony?
What I've got is something of deep and meaningful interest to my heart, and that is a little bit of news about the Crow reboot, which they've been talking about for years. It's run into problem after problem, you know. They've had problems in pre-production over and over again. They've had various actors attached, including Bradley Cooper, Luke Evans, Tom Hiddleston, Jack Huston, all to play the titular character, but it's never really gone anywhere. What's cool right now is that the man who's played Ronan Dex, Conan the Barbarian, Khal Drogo, and is currently filming as Aquaman, Jason Momoa, is in talks to take over the role of the main character in The Crow going forward. Now, I don't know what's actually going to become of it. This might be another time that it stalls in pre-production. And he's just freaking huge. He's a monster. Thinking of him as, you know, the angsty guitar player who dies and comes back is a little odd, but Jason Momoa is freaking awesome, and if they get decent writers, and from the sounds of things, according to an article on Dark Horizons, comic creator James O'Barr indicated that the film will stick closer to the source material than any of the previous film adaptations, which would make it a very, very dark film, even darker than the original Crow. So that could be a really, really cool thing. It could be a lot of fun. And Jason Momoa, we've seen him play roles that, you know, are a pretty broad spectrum of character, so he might be able to pull it off.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the original look of the Crow, the J.L. Barr version where he's, you know, got the crazy, mushy kind of kiss haircut, biker jacket, he's rolling around on a motorcycle and everything, my mom might be able to pull it off.
He reminds me of the guy from Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Frankenfurter?
Can't remember if that's it, then yes. But the look, I'm saying that look in particular reminds me of Rocky Horror Picture Show for some reason.
Looks more like he would be a buff Joan Jett from back in the day.
Okay.
But still, I mean, Momoa is expandable. His roles and his acting, you know, is all over the place. And I love him whatever he does, so I don't give a shit. And it's a Crow, so I'll be seeing it.
Yeah, I will too. No matter what happens, I'll be seeing it. So, AJ, what have you got?
Well, speaking of Jason Momoa and his film roles, the most famous and lethal of the various foes of DC Comics' underwater hero Aquaman, Black Manta, will serve as the main antagonist for a James Wan-directed Aquaman solo film at Warner Brothers. It should all be followed by a big, really? No shit. Who else were they going to have him fight? A whale? Like, when you talk Aquaman, you automatically think Black Manta. First introduced in 67, and having undergone several revisions, each version of Black Manta essentially has him vowing revenge on Aquaman for a perceived slight, be it the accidental, death of a father to the not intervening when he was kidnapped and sexually abused. Manta is a violent human with a battle suit capable of functioning in any oceanic environment. There was rumor last year that Common might play the role, but that's no longer the case, it seems. Looks like Geoff Johns and James Wan are creating a treatment for Will Beale to write. Again, it's a big no shit when it comes to Black Manta playing the role, being the bad guy. Whoever plays him, though, I mean, they got to realize it. Momoa's huge, and they've got to have somebody as intense, if not big, I don't want to say big, but intimidating as Momoa does. Otherwise, it's just going to look like a bully picking on a little kid.
I mean, seriously, when you talk Aquaman, no one even thinks of another villain. The only villain that comes to mind, the only arch foe for Aquaman really is Black Manta. So it's not a big surprise that Black Manta would be the big bad for the Aquaman film, but you're absolutely right. I mean, without someone who can pose some kind of on-screen cinematic visual threat to a guy of Momoa's size, it's just not going to be believable. So it's going to be a little bit tough finding the right person to play that character, and then hoping that they bring life to that character and do it justice is going to be another thing.
Even more so if they have to get the costume right, the armor and all that. The way Black Manta looks right now in any of the movies, the cartoons or the comic books, I mean, he's just 1 centimeter away from being a bad guy in Stargate, you know, with the helmets
really
and the way that they look. So they're going to have to be really careful with that.
With the helm and... Okay. And, well, I'm a huge fan of Stargate, so, you know, I'm not going to really complain about the armor and the helmet and the look.
Right, but it won't be Horus fighting Aquaman. It'll be Black Manta.
Very, very true.
What else you got?
Moving from there, poor Aquaman has a bad history as far as video games go, but a huge game was released just a couple of days ago, No Man's Sky. And granted, it hasn't had its PC release yet, but it's one of the most anticipated games of a good long while because it's a massive universe, procedurally generated, which means next to nothing to most people, but it means just very little bit of code is building the entire universe as you explore it. So, you know, No Man's Sky hit a couple of days ago, and people have put in ridiculous amounts of time already. I'm not one of them. I've had very little time to actually put into it. But the game itself is making news based on the way it goes about things. So while PS4 is the platform right now and everybody's talking about it, the irritant that a lot of people have is, despite the size of the universe, even if multiple players end up on the same planet, they can't see each other. So you're exploring the same world and it's completely empty. So, you know, there are enemies somewhere in the universe, but there aren't any other players, which kind of detracts from things. But the aspect of exploration, of being able to name your own planets, being able to make discoveries, discover animals, discover systems, discover all of this stuff, is exciting to a lot of people. And people were hoping to be able to interact with other players and, you know, run across this planet that's already been named by someone else who discovered it first, or that kind of thing. But the procedurally generated world means that the world is generated on your system, which means that even though you're playing online, you're not really playing with anyone else. So that's a major drawback. The game has got massive sales already. It's got it had a whole lot of fanfare well before release date. But it's, if you're into the kind of thing where you're exploring, discovering, occasionally fighting the enemy, then it's a whole lot of fun. But I don't know how long it's going to continue to be a whole lot of fun for you, because you don't really get to interact with anybody else.
Personally, it sounds boring as fuck. And I hate open world games, so I will not be picking this one up. But I'll just have to keep an eye out for everybody else's reviews, or maybe if anybody decides to stream themselves playing or Twitch it. If I'm bored enough, maybe I'll watch.
Yeah, I mean, I love open world games, but the whole point of open world games for me is the possibility of running across someone else on that world. So
this feels very isolationist, you know, like very,
and
sounds like my life, and I don't want to live my life in a video game.
Much as I love being by myself, you know, you're right, I don't want to live my life in a video game. I'd much rather run across other people and be fighting for discoveries of new worlds and new creatures and whatnot with other players, rather than fighting against myself to get to the center of the universe and figure out what the big secret is.
Exactly.
So that wraps us up for news this time around. We'll be back with you with reviews just after this break.
Hi, this is Joey Labarnik, and you can check out my latest comic, A Man Called Kraken, at comixology.com, and be sure to keep checking the Forbidden Panel website, because you're going to be able to see my artwork in the upcoming Volume 2 of Forbidden Tales. It's me, bitch.
Yes, I am. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Panelcast. So this is our review section, and in this section, we may have some good things to say, we may not, who knows, but the first thing we want to talk about, freshly in our minds, talk about is Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. Anthony, why don't you go ahead and lead us off?
All right. I picked this up because, well, I'm a Harry Potter fan, and AJ had already gone through it. But, you know, it's a new entry into the Harry Potter universe, which was really, really interesting to me. The story in and of itself, being that, you know, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child is actually a stage play that was then collected and put into a book, is the format is not your usual Harry Potter story. But it tells a tale about, let's see, I can't remember how many years on we are.
From 19.
19 years on, okay.
It picks up from the end of the last book, where they're on the train station, Harry Potter and the kids, and they're seeing their kids off to Hogwarts. It picks up right there.
Yes, it picks up in that very last scene. And it tells Albus Severus Potter's tale, realistically. It's a fantastic story, and the kid goes through some absolutely horrible things. It's like no one in the Harry Potter universe has a monopoly on crappy childhoods. He goes through a lot, and it's told in a really interesting and intriguing way. It pulls you in, it makes you care about the characters. Maybe I'm biased because I am a Harry Potter fan, but I felt drawn in. I felt an attachment to Albus, to Scorpius, to all the various characters, the new ones and the old, that we met during the course of this story. And it was just a really great ride.
Yeah, like I said, it picks up right at the train station, and it I don't know. I mean, it time travels so fast. Before you know it, you're like in this fourth year at Hogwarts, and he's just gone through so much. And okay, so spoiler, everybody, from this point on, spoiler,
beware. Which I've been trying to avoid.
I have no shame in this. This book is so dark and dismal and depressing and human that you almost, like, there was a part of me at some point that kind of wanted to stop reading because it was just a little too real. Granted, it was based in magical world, but it was just a little too messed up. Like Anthony said, this is more of a dark journey than a lot of other kids have had to take, especially in the Harry Potter universe. I don't want to say it was worse than what Harry Potter had to deal with, but it was pretty much on par. It was dark and depressing, and I loved every second of it.
To be fair, though, the correlation was made often throughout the book that as much as Harry identified with James, his older son, Albus was more like him than any of his other children.
That's because James went and had the life Harry wanted. And his daughter, who we really didn't get to spend a lot of time with, she was still a very Jenny character. You know, she was still a very Weasley character. And here's Albus going through all this trials and tribulations that Harry had to go through so we can see eye to eye. And at the same time, Harry's just trying to be a dad and say, no, you don't want to do this. Like, please, you know, I'm not yelling at you to yell at you. I'm trying to be your father and prevent you from suffering the pain I had to suffer through.
It was one of those things I actually enjoyed about this story. No parent has an easy job. No matter how you look at it, parenting is hard. And from Harry's perspective, it's even more so because he had only his aunt and uncle as parents as he was growing up, and they are absolutely horrific role models. He didn't actually have a father to kind of model himself after when it came to what he needed to do to raise and guide his own children. So he's kind of learning things as he goes, and he's screwing it up along the way because if you look at Harry's past, that's kind of what he does. He makes mistakes, he stumbles, he eventually figures out that he royally screwed up, and then he looks for ways to fix it. And it's really rough to realize from his son's perspective that he's doing the exact same thing, but when you look at it from Harry's perspective, he is literally doing the best he's capable of, but it's just not enough to actually connect with and help develop his son properly into the person he wants to be.
Until his son literally goes and relives the most horrific events that Harry Potter had to live through in his life himself, like literally. Verbatim. He had to be there for Cedric Diggory dying. He had to be there for his parents dying. He had to be there for all that stuff and experience that. And, I mean, poor kid to actually have to... It was one thing for Harry Potter as a child to live through that experience. But, you know, at the end of the book, when he's having to hold everybody back from saving his parents, but having to live and watch them die again for both of them was traumatic for me, and I'm just a fucking reader.
I mean, it's bad enough that he has occasional dreams and, you know, the Dementor-induced flashbacks as to his parents' death to actually have to stand and watch it happen and to prevent everybody else from doing anything to stop it. I mean, that kind of thing crushes an adult. So what does it do to a kid?
Right. So, yeah, to say that the story is harsh, to say the least, is being modest with it. Again, I think it was a great story. And there's that question that we both have asked ourselves, like, is this truly a good story? Or do we miss Harry Potter that much that we'll take any bit of Harry Potter that comes in and absorb it, you know, and swear that it's good? But for me, honestly, I think that it was just that good. I'm excited. I really want to see the play now. I want to see the stage production of everything they do with it. However... The one thing, you know, that this is 19 years after Voldemort fell. They catch you up on what everybody's been doing and everybody's new jobs and stuff. But what kind of was, I noticed missing was there was no love shown for Dobby. Dobby, and no other house elves mentioned in the story.
That's true. They were completely omitted.
Right.
And I mean, when you think about the fact that Albus and Scorpius spend time at Hogwarts, and the relationship that Harry, Ron, and Hermione had with house elves in general, especially those that worked at Hogwarts, you would think there would be some mention of them, at least in passing, if nothing else.
I mean, maybe relating to their kids. Plus, these kids are in Slytherin. So you know at some point they had to come across some of the other students mistreating the house elves or you know, doing something bad or something. You know, it's just, it never comes across. So I was curious, like, there should have at least been, like, you know, the Dobby Memorial Laundromat or something, you know, like hand-me-down clothes store in memoriam of Dobby. But there was no mention of him.
True. True. Very true. But in short, we both love this story. It was dark. It was harsh. It was very, very rough for both Albus and Scorpius in different ways.
Both sounding like Transformer names.
But you guys should go read it if you haven't already, and we'd absolutely love to hear your feedback.
Honestly, it took me 4 hours to get through it. It's selling like crazy. Millions and millions of copies have already sold.
2 million copies in the first 2 days, I believe.
Yeah, it's, get out there and pick it up for yourselves. You'll understand.
And let us hear from you, because we want to know what you think about it, whether or not we're jaded and we just need another Harry Potter story, or if it was actually that good.
Right.
But moving on from Harry Potter, yes, it's time to move on. AJ, what did you think about Suicide Squad?
Suicide Squad. Now, we're talking about a movie with a lot of hype. I have not seen on the outside of a film a more cohesive cast, more buddy-type environment than I have with this film. This is just in the promotion. Everybody seems like they had a great time on filming it. All the stories you heard about behind-the-scenes antics of Jared Leto and the gifts that he gave, and just the fact that Margot Robbie was tattooing everybody with Squad. And she even had her own Harley's little tattoo parlor that they had set up. Just all this stuff, I'd never seen so much when it comes to a film. So going into this, I was excited, and I told myself, this looks like a cool movie. I'm just going to go enjoy myself. And I did. I enjoyed myself. Were there quirks and flaws in it? Of course. But honestly, that night, I just didn't care. I enjoyed the movie. I would sell my soul to spend 5 minutes on Margot Robbie's ass. Those shorts she was wearing were phenomenal. Don't shake your head at me like that. You know I'm right.
I can't argue with it.
Every scene, and I don't know if it was me or what, but her shorts got shorter throughout the film. Okay with it.
Well, actually, they just traveled further and further up the ass.
Hey, you know what? Whatever it had to do, I'm sorry if that sounds extremely chauvinistic and uncaring and unfeeling for us, and I apologize for that if we have offended anybody out there, but I'm a man. I'm telling you the truth, what I felt.
And to be fair, Margot Robbie actually did a fantastic job on screen.
She did a great job as far as portraying the character and whatnot. I felt Harley when I saw her. She dropped the accent a couple times, but she made it seem like the accent she had was just part of the neurosis that she was suffering. Like whatever voice in her head was talking that day, and that's the accent she had. So that's the excuse I made for her to make it okay.
Yeah, I get that. And I understand it did drop here and there, but she gave credence to the role. I mean, I felt Harley on screen. It's like the outfit wasn't what I expect for Harley, granted, but there was an essence to the character that shone through, and that's what was important for me.
Right. Now, going further to talk about the actual film itself, it had a lot of action. I mean, there was great action going on all over the place, and I thought it was well done. All the different fight scenes and the gun shooting and everything. It was crazy, over-the-top man action movie. This is one of those movies where you would be like, you know, it's on par with like Die Hard or Lethal Weapon as far as action and bullets thrown all around.
Yeah, it was.
Special effects-wise, I thought they did a great job with the effects. All the magic and all the other practical, everything going around, I thought the special effects did a great job. Story, anyway, so Margot Robbie. The story was lacking. I admit, the plot and everything, it seemed a little hazy, and they even shit on their own selves at some point in time, stepped on their own toes, if they will. I really need to watch my language at some point. But, yeah, the story wasn't all that great. But I didn't go for a story. I already know the story of Suicide Squad. Okay, I from just the trailers, I got it. So I just went to go see these guys bro it up on screen, which is basically what we got. And it was fun, and it was awesome. And if there is one thing I will say about Margot Robbie's portrayal about it, is that she got her ass handed to her, stood back up, and dished it back out. And that's the Harley I wanted to see. Joker-wise, Jared Leto, I'm interested to see what the cutscenes were. I thought, while I admire and respect the man for the sacrifices he made and how he got into character and stayed in character the entire time they were filming, and I also respect, and there is no other Joker other than Heath Ledger in my book. Heath Ledger nailed it.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, when you do such a perfect job on a character, nobody else will ever hold a candle in that variation of that character. So instead, we got a different style of Joker because the other style was perfected. So Jared Leto's style of Joker, while I may not have liked it, I understood it. I liked the Alex Ross flashback where they had Harley Quinn in her full outfit and Joker in his suit dancing around, twirling around like the cover from Alex Ross. I have the t-shirt, for Christ's sake. So overall for me, I like the movie. I want to go see it again, because I want to see all the things I wasn't paying attention to. Anthony?
I have three different interpretations of this one. I have the comic book fan, the person who's in love with the Harley-Joker relationship, and the what Suicide Squad was as far as comic books go. I have the guy who just likes superhero movies version of that interpretation of it. Superhero movies, action movies, that kind of thing. And then I have the cinematographer interpretation of it. And there's a broad spectrum there. And that's what it comes down to. For me, when I went and saw it originally, I just enjoyed the ride. It's I don't want to tear this apart while I'm watching it. I want to have fun with it. I want to enjoy it as much as I possibly can. And it was a fun ride. It was a good ride. There was crazy action. Special effects were really well done. And in particular, I'd say that Deadshot, Harley, and Killer Croc were nailed pretty well as far as characters go.
Killer Croc could have been about 7 feet taller.
Well, this is true, but it's hard to cast an actor that's like 11 feet tall. It's hard to find that kind of person.
Jason Momoa would do it.
But Jared, I agree with you on Jared Leto's portrayal of the Joker. I'm not a huge fan of Jared Leto. I never have been. But he threw himself into this role. I have to give him credit. He absolutely threw himself into the role. Now, the interpretation of the Joker, there was no way he was going to nail it the way Heath Ledger did, so you're right. They had to go in a different direction. I don't completely enjoy the direction that they went, but it was still a fun ride. It was still fun to watch. And you're right. Story.
Be mad at the writers who wrote Joker that way. Don't be mad at Jared Leto for portraying the character the way he was told to portray it. He put his heart and soul into that, and for that he will have my respect.
He's an actor that got a script and did the absolute best with it that he possibly could. So I respect him for that. I fully do.
If it wasn't the fact that he portrayed the Joker, you would totally love what he did.
Probably so. Well, maybe. Still Jared Leto, and I'm biased. But as for a villain, plot development, character development even in this story, just looking at it from a cinematography standpoint, there were holes and gaps and it was lacking. But if you like the characters, if you like the premise of Suicide Squad, you'll have a lot of fun just watching the film. Like we're doing, you might tear it apart after the fact, but
that's our job though.
But that's what we do. He's right, it's what we do. But it's a lot of fun. So, I mean, it's a whole lot of action. It's some crazy outfits. It's some really, really over-the-top behavior and some great graphics. It's just a fun way to spend hour and a half, almost 2 hours.
Over 2 hours.
Really?
Yeah.
It was over 2 hours, which tells you how much...
123 minutes.
I lost track of time during this film.
Right.
So that should say something.
If you want to go and see the Ghostbusters ending done right, then go see this movie. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. That wraps us up for reviews this time around, everybody. We'll be back with you one more time after this break.
Hi, this is Vanessa with Blackbird Bows, inviting you to visit my website at blackbirdbows.com, where you can find 100% original and customized bows for every occasion. That's blackbirdbows.com.
All right, everybody, and welcome back. So it comes time for us to say goodbye to everybody. I apologize if anything I had said during the last segment during my review of Suicide Squad may have offended anybody. I don't mean to be. I just get so excited about stuff that words fly out of my mouth. That's why I'm a comic book writer. I want to remind everybody to please come find us on Instagram, on Snapchat, on Twitter, on Tumblr, on Donner, on Vixen, on Rudolph, on everything, on Caesar Salad. But you can find us anywhere. We're all over the place. September 24th is a date that you're going to want to put down in your calendar. That is the day for NerdBotCon being held at the Pasadena Convention Center. You will see us, or Justin and myself, down there having a booth and pimping our wares out. We will have posters, books, stickers, sacrificial lambs, cosplayers, Anthony's dread, just a whole bunch of random stuff that we'll have down there.
Hey.
Just the one dread.
I need them.
It's too late. I already took it. When you get a chance, tickets are $13. Like, really, they can't get any cheaper than that. You may pay $170 for parking, but to get in will be $13. Don't quote me on the $170 part. So we'll be out there on September 24th. Please come visit us. If you're not doing anything this weekend, we are hosting a 24-hour Create Something Day here at our clubhouse. Check out our event page or our website to find out directions and times, 9 a.m. to 9 a.m. It doesn't have to be about comic books. You can come down here and cook, work on recipes, sew, put Anthony's dread back. Whatever you want to do, it's just 24 hours. It's a window of opportunity for you to do something that you've been meaning to do and just haven't had the time. You don't have to stay here all day, but you can at least stay till the pizza's gone.
And my hair is beautiful, and I need your help.
Yes, to make it beautiful again. So, check us out all over the place. We are everywhere. We will be everywhere. That's really all I had. Anthony, you got anything more you want to add?
I don't. I apologize to all of you out there who have been checking the website looking for one of my reviews lately. Life has been absolutely insane. I hope to get back to it in the next few days, so you should see something from me within the next week, I hope.
Yeah, I'm not going to hold my breath. Anyway, for Anthony, this is AJ. Thanking you guys again for tuning in. This has been episode 159 of the Panelcast. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.